Welcome back to Ryer on YouTube. It is a Monday night. It is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice of fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Travis Ryer back alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard, longtime college football analyst down there at First Coast News in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, of course, also a voter for the most prestigious individual honor in all of collegiate athletics, the Heisman Trophy. Brent, might get some interesting thoughts from you in terms of how ballots got shaken up maybe a little bit over this previous weekend. And, of course, we have Chino. Chino's ready to go, our show mascot, ready to get this thing done.
He is all about timing, so he knew as soon as he heard your voice, up he came.
Chino, always on time, and we certainly appreciate you tuning in live here on YouTube, also on Facebook. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel as of yet, we'd appreciate you going in and doing that right now. Hit that subscribe button. There's a notification bell right there as well. If you would turn on those notifications, that way you'll get all of our content as it drops, or at least you'll be alerted to that. And as always, a thumbs up is appreciated. A like helps out the program as well. Well, Brent, we typically do previous week superlatives on the early in the week program. We're going to do that tonight. And again, we welcome your comments here in the show chat. You have some thoughts on those topics as well. We'd love to hear those. But just a really defining weekend in the Southeastern Conference. You think about the television dollars. You think about ticket prices. You think about the commitment that fan bases around this league make to being there week in and week out. I'd say for the most part, those folks got their money's worth in a abbreviated kind of slate over the weekend.
Well, listen, and to start off first with Alabama, Georgia, those numbers usually come out when, Trav, at least by midweek, right? So I'm guessing those numbers will be gargantuan, don't you?
It's going to be interesting to see the breakdown of the Alabama-Georgia numbers, because the way that game got so one-sided so quick, I was at a local grocery store today, and I was going through the checkout and got to talking to one of the store workers who turned out to be a big Georgia Bulldog fan and said, you know, I turned the game off in the second quarter. The Georgia fan. Wow. And said, I was shocked the next day. Like, went to bed, done with it, and didn't find out until the next day how that game actually ended up playing out. So maybe from hour to hour, I'd like to see a breakdown to see if people left, if people came back, because it really was. I said this on Talking Tide with Chase Goodbread last night here on the channel. It felt like three games in one, because it was Alabama's game in the first half. It was Georgia's for a lot of the second half, and then it was Alabama's at the finish.
And again, the two of the best rosters anywhere, quarterbacks, some interesting things that happened on defense that we will get into also. But I think largely it really kind of probably told us that this may not be the only time that these two teams meet over the next few weeks, either in the SEC championship game or playoffs, or both.
But three times potentially for these teams to see each other.
Absolutely, no question about that. So, but it was, in the last, I think it was like 8 minutes. I've got this here. Trav, that the action was frankly just unbelievable, the way both teams kept scoring. Yeah, in the last 9 minutes and 46 seconds, 26 points, 392 yards, 10.6 yards per play, an average of a point every 22 seconds.
I mean, you had back-to-back plays there in the final 3 minutes of 66 and 77 yards on those deep balls from Carson Beck to Dylan Bell, and also Jalen Milroe to the prodigy, prodigy, in Ryan Williams. By the way, David Dalrymple watching the program here, he chimes in, speaking of Ryan Williams, He says Ryan Williams looks like he may be the best wide receiver at Bama ever. He says he's a lifelong fan, and I ain't young. So David's seen a few. He saw Ray Perkins as a wide receiver in the 60s. You know, Ozzie Newsome, before he was a tight end in the NFL, he was a wide receiver at Alabama in some wishbone offenses. And then you get into the 80s and into the 90s with David Palmer and then the Nick Saban era and all those guys that have come through in the last 15 years or so, starting with Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Calvin Ridley. It's a pretty extensive list, but it's hard to argue with Dave as of this point in terms of Ryan Williams, the 17-year-old, and what he's been bringing to the table on a daily or a weekly basis anyway. So, Brent, let's get into our surprise of week five, where SEC action is concerned. Was there a player that surprised you? Was there an outcome, a team that maybe surprised you? Give us that surprise of the week that you have.
I'll go with Kentucky. I thought that win was huge for them. They've got a little time now to take a break and think about it. But for them to really be able to come through, not just come close. But I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. First time that Kentucky defeated a top six team on the road since 1977, which is quite a long time. I'm curious your take on this. Trav, the Vandergrift pass to Barrion Brown on fourth and seven is already being talked about as one of the most impactful plays that Kentucky has had in quite some time. And I tell you, when you really think about, they beat Ole Miss, and frankly, it makes you wonder if they'd gone for that fourth down instead of punting against Georgia. Man alive, what will we be thinking about those Wildcats today?
Yeah, Mark Stoops kind of absolved himself of the second guessers after that Georgia game by going for it there on that fourth down, and not just going for it, but taking a shot in Vandergrift with a perfectly thrown ball.
Really was.
Around. Lumpy Ditz here in the comments makes a pretty astute comment, though. He says, Kentucky surprised me. Ole Miss did not.
Yeah.
It is huge. There's no doubt, because it is a win over a top 10 opponent. No doubt about that on the road. But it was Ole Miss. And unfortunately, I think that probably resonates with some Ole Miss fans. Mm-hmm. Whenever Ole Miss seems to be in this type of situation, it doesn't always work out all that well. You know, I'm with you though. Kind of in that regard. Although my surprise of the week is the start of the Alabama Georgia game.
Yeah, true. Oh yeah.
Alabama getting out to a 28-0 lead. I didn't have that in any form or fashion. Oh, no. I guess there was a path that I could envision for Kentucky taking because of Stoops and defensively what you anticipate them being able to do on that side of the ball, perhaps getting the job done at Ole Miss, but I just did not see that start coming for Alabama. No. Even with Jalen Milroe at quarterback and those receivers and the personnel that they have on the offensive side of the ball, I was just shocked that Alabama made Georgia look slow on defense. And Georgia typically is not that. And really sort of, I don't know, bring into focus just how this offense can be so dynamic as it gets going. I know a lot of the narrative has been, and understandably so, I guess you could also say as big a surprise was the comeback by Georgia in the second half, because offensively what we had seen from the Bulldogs against Power Five competition in two previous games didn't really speak to that being a possibility. Maybe big picture wise, what happened to Georgia in getting down 28-0, 30-7, 33-15 can prove to be a real positive for Mike Bobo's unit,
no
because
doubt.
It sort of forced them. Mm-hmm. It kicked them into getting going finally this season. And Carson Beck and those receivers, it took some time. There were some mistakes in the first half, Beck had four turnovers in the game, but to have four turnovers and take the lead in the fourth quarter and still have a chance to win the game, I think that speaks well for Georgia. We'll see if they can validate it, you know, beginning this week with a home game against Auburn that we'll talk about a little bit later in the week. But there were a couple of surprises, I guess, in that Alabama-Georgia game. But for me, just the explosion for Alabama offensively would be at the top of that list. What about player of the week in the Southeastern Conference, Brent? Some candidates to consider there for sure. We don't want to forget about Texas A&M, Arkansas. That was an impactful game for those two teams out in Arlington. I thought you had some very strong performances in that matchup. But I'm going to go – how do you not go with Jalen Milroe?
I agree. Absolutely.
Because, nearly 400 passing yards, over 100 rushing yards against a Kirby Smart defense. I mean, that's worthy of player of the week against Western Kentucky. But to do that against Georgia and give Georgia credit defensively in the second half, kind of cleaned some things up and got off the field, which really was the precipice for that comeback for the Bulldogs. But Milroe was otherworldly. And as a Heisman Trophy voter, I know you had to take note.
Oh, well, I think he is at the top of the list for a lot of Heisman voters at this point. I mean, he just had the complete game. I mean, everybody by now knows the record that he set in that game. I mean, he just he looks so much more polished. And others have been somewhat really weren't ready to anoint him until he improved that intermediate and short passing. And look, he was masterful with all of that. The design runs came at a tremendous time. I mean, his speed, I don't know if he – does he get enough credit for that, Trev? I mean, he turned the corner and outran the Georgia secondary, frankly. So no question about that. I'll get mine in a minute. But for yours, Milroe has just been absolutely I just think tremendous improvement.
You know, there's fast and then there's playing even faster.
Yeah.
And I think Milroe, to me, looks like he's reached a point of comfort and confidence and command with that offense where he's not just fast. He's playing, processing, doing everything faster in comparison to a year ago. I don't think he's – if you put a stopwatch on him, he's gotten any faster, really. But, man, when you can pretty much just play fast because you've reached that level of sort of comfort with a – with an approach or a scheme, that's what he looks like to me. What about your player of the week, Brent?
I'm going to go with someone that probably a lot of people missed, and I get the competition here, but Caden Durham, the running back at LSU, get this, 128 rushing yards on 7 carries. That is 18 yards per carry. He also added 3 catches for 89 yards and another touchdown. Trev, would you say this is a team that needs a bell cow in that backfield? And I think they're developing one in Durham.
It sounds like it. It really does with Durham, as you pointed out there. And, you know, we don't want to forget about the defensive side of the ball either. Sure. I mean, a guy like Kip Lewis with that huge play for the Oklahoma Sooners in that late win, that comeback win over the Auburn Tigers with that pick six, that's one first ever SEC win for Oklahoma too, coming off the loss to Tennessee. So don't want to overlook a guy like, Kip Lewis. I thought, you had a couple other defensive guys for OU, which you can kind of hang your hat on right now. OU had how many sacks in that game? Thomas had 2, had 4 sacks, but finished that game with authority on the defensive side of the ball. And then,
that's right.
I think also again, when you look around the league at some of the other offensive performances too, I think if not for that pick six, we might be talking about Peyton Thorne.
Oh yeah.
I mean, throws for 328, 338, 3 touchdowns, but then the interception there late in the game. And so hard not to, to look past that. I thought Arch Manning was very impressive in his latest start for the Texas Longhorns and that win over Mississippi State. It was a bit lethargic in some ways, maybe to start 14-6 halftime lead. If you're Jeff Lebby, you're probably feeling pretty good about what you got out of your team, even in a 22-point loss. Michael Van Buren, another true freshman in the league, making a start at quarterback, this time for Mississippi State. I think Michael Hawkins Jr., the quarterback for Oklahoma, seems to be in that mix. I mean, when you look at his numbers, it wasn't a pretty day for Oklahoma on the offensive side, but that offense was so depleted at the wide receiver position.
Unbelievable.
Hawkins led the way with 161 passing yards, also led the way in rushing with 69 yards on 14 carries and a touchdown. It was really a courageous and heroic performance in a lot of ways. I thought Le'Veon Moss for Texas A&M in that 21-17 win over Arkansas in Arlington, 13 carries, 117 yards. Noah Thomas had a big day.
He did.
At the wide receiver position. I think Marcel Reed threw for like 163 yards, and Thomas had 109 yards receiving. So a lot of different ways you can go with that one. But I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good about those selections there, Brent. What about the team on the rise? Is it Oklahoma, in your opinion, after that win over Auburn? Is it Kentucky that we have to look to? Because even in the defeat to Georgia, that was an impressive performance. Then to go on the road and beat Ole Miss, which way would you go there? Would you maybe consider, you know, again, an A&M?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah. I'll go with Oklahoma in there. Look, when you I'm curious if you have I told some folks last week on another podcast, you and I have been covering this basically the same amount of time as far as media, and that was the early 90s. Trav, I don't ever remember, do you, a game where the entire starting wide receiver core was out. I don't ever remember that. And for them to make the plays that they did, I mean, that you could make an argument. Their defense is coming toward being elite. So, they've got what's going to be a very interesting game late November before Bama plays Auburn. They play Oklahoma
on the road
in Norman. Yeah. So, I would agree with Oklahoma. They've got some time off, but the reality is, like on the pick six, when you've got elite athletes on defense, Trav, and Bama 92 in some of those middle teen defenses under Nick Saban, you've got elite defensive players. They can turn a turnover into a touchdown.
Yeah, they can score off of it. 2005 Alabama was good that way.
Oh, yeah.
Even a team that came up just short of having a chance to maybe compete for a national championship under Mike Shula. But yeah, I mean, I love Oklahoma's grit and toughness.
Yes.
It's hard not to be impressed by that. I just wonder about the sustainability.
True.
In today's game and in this league. Because, yeah, you get a week off, but you know who else is, I think, getting a week off coming up? The Texas Longhorns.
Yeah, that's right.
Who the Oklahoma Sooners will see
in
Dallas in two Saturdays. And I know a lot of Oklahoma fans breathing a sigh of relief because – I was almost in I told you so mode before that pick six.
Yep.
It was looking like OU and two in the SEC and the potential for three straight SEC losses with Texas on the horizon. But breathe a sigh of relief, Boomer. You got that first SEC win. I also worry about Hawkins. He's not the biggest guy in the world. I love the way he plays. But, sustaining that over the course of 12, 13 games. You know, he takes a pounding, man. Kind of like Jackson Dart for Ole Miss, who is a who is a bigger guy for sure than Michael Hawkins. So let's talk about, I guess, my team on the rise, right? I need to go there. I'll go Texas A&M, although I think we're going to have maybe an area where they also qualify here in just a little bit. Maybe you're going to go there or I'll go there again with them. We'll see. But let's go with a team on the decline. It's been pretty easy to pick the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah.
Throughout the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. So I won't go there with Auburn. I don't think Arkansas played poorly against Texas A&M, but it just continues to feel like Arkansas has improved to the point of being competitive with the Oklahoma States and the Texas A&Ms on the schedule. But getting over that hump, man, if they could have split even one of these two games against A&M in Oklahoma State, I'd feel a lot better about Sam Pittman moving forward, because it's going to get nothing but tougher starting this week for Arkansas, as the Tennessee Vols, coming off a bye week, are going to visit Fayetteville to take on the Hogs.
Well, here's one of the problems with Arkansas. They're among the 20 worst Division I teams in turnovers. That they've lost 9 on the season. Now, Auburn obviously is up there too. But to your point, that is a real bugaboo for them. And again, they're improved. There's no doubt about that. Bobby Petrino has done a lot for them. But at some point, if you're Sam Pittman, if you really want to be back another year, Travis, don't you have to finish these games?
Yeah, that's where the trick comes in. And especially after you've kind of grown accustomed to losing, it becomes not even as much of, are we good enough in terms of personnel and talent?
Oh, yeah.
It's, do we have those one or two guys that can really push us over the hump? I think, and especially watching UCF get drummed by Colorado, and UCF now is home to KJ Jefferson, previously of Arkansas. I think just in terms of being able to keep a team around in these games, I think Taylen Green is showing you he can do that. 3 for 279 and a touchdown, had another interception in the game against Texas A&M. But what Arkansas didn't get against A&M is that big three contribution. Now, Isaac Tesla stepped up big time.
He did.
At the wide receiver position. 5 catches, 120 yards. So you did get that. But Jaquindon Jackson with just 37 yards on 10 carries. And that's where prior to Saturday, it seemed like every week Arkansas was getting quarterback production, running back production. And that also speaks, though, to the Texas A&M front seven and Mike Elko's defense, that they at least took something away, you know, and got after Green pretty good, too.
Well, listen, to your point about A&M, one guy who's waking up is Mr. Scorton on the defensive line, 4 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, forced a fumble that really put the game away. They've been promoting this guy all along, transfer from Purdue, that he would start stepping up. And look, we can see in Lavon Moss really – as you mentioned, 117 yards. Trav, if A&M's defense starts catching up with that offense, how good could this bunch be?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to consider. There's no doubt about it. It kind of leads me into my team with the most approved, which, you know, I kind of go both ways on this one, because this matchup coming up this week with A&M hosting Mizzou, I think you could pick either one of those teams.
Yes.
Because really the last time we saw Mizzou was what, an overtime win at home against Vanderbilt. So I think Mizzou has been parallel in a lot of ways to Ole Miss going back to the preseason, because you saw both these teams in the top 10 of a lot of those preseason polls. And then you looked at the schedules and you thought, well, that kind of sets up pretty well for both these teams. I think Ole Miss you could put in this category with the road trip coming up to South Carolina. How's that team going to respond to that disappointing loss at home to Kentucky? But I think I'm going to go Texas A&M here, because they're playing at home. Mm-hmm. It's an early kickoff Saturday. You got a top 10 team in your building. You're wondering, Mike Elko, you didn't take advantage of that type of situation with Notre Dame in the season opener. So here's another opportunity to kind of validate where this program is headed.
I want to make a point with both Missouri and Ole Miss, and I'll kind of go more with Ole Miss here, Trav, look, and particularly for Ole Miss, I don't think Ole Miss's early schedule has helped them at all.
And I think Lane Kiffin would agree with you.
Until last Saturday, they really haven't had. Look, they'll do their thing in the first half, and everybody else is on the sideline looking up in the stands. I'm being facetious about that, but you get the point. But you and I talked about this during the preseason. It certainly hasn't helped Ole Miss. And my question to you, I wonder, is Missouri going to have the same fate?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm wondering here. Kind of what I'm thinking could unfold. Now, look, I think Missouri's good enough to go into College Station and win, but I think with Marcel Reed stepping in there now at the quarterback position, mm-hmm. he didn't exactly mm-hmm. light it up against Arkansas, but he doesn't have to, you know, and I think defensively A&M can do enough and perhaps be disruptive enough with that front to give some problems to Brady mm-hmm. Cook and, you know, do a good job against the run game, because it looks like Mizzou has filled that void quite nicely moving on from Cody Schrader from a year ago. So I think there's some outside matchups you're going to be fascinated by that we'll talk about later in the week mm-hmm. with this Missouri and with Weiss and Burden. When you talk about Mizzou to work with Brady Cook and then, you know, Noah Thomas and those guys, Moose Muhammad for Texas A&M,
right?
Working with Marcel Reed. Mm-hmm. So, I get the sense, though, the defenses are probably going to shine more than people are anticipating. In this one, I won't be surprised if this game struggles in terms of a winner for A&M and Mizzou to get into the mid-20s. I think that game could be in the low 20s or so with the winner kind of coming from that area. Well, Brent, there you go. There are Week 5 accolades for the Southeastern Conference, superlatives for the Southeastern Conference. You got any other interesting news and notes for you? I know coaches typically around the league talk on Monday, maybe Tuesday. Then you get to the media teleconference on Wednesday. But injuries, too, always a big part of the storyline. And that's certainly been the case in the Southeastern Conference. Sounds like Lenore Sellers for South Carolina should be good to go for mm-hmm. Ole Miss this week.
Yeah, that'll be interesting because South Carolina's got Alabama next week to go along with that, too. I think it tells you something that we're not talking a whole lot about Texas.
Yeah.
Now we will as they get, because the upcoming schedule, particularly that Georgia game in
Georgia.
It's just going to be really unbelievable. And the other thing is you and I talked about this. My goodness, Trav, their wide receiver room in Texas. Yeah. DeAndre Moore now stepping up. What was it? 103 yards on 4 grabs. Now that was one thing I was really impressed with that Jalen Milroe did, is throw to so many different receivers.
Yeah.
But I think Manning did too. And my goodness, how good by what November could this Longhorn wide receiver room be?
Yeah, it sounds like Quinn Ewers is tracking towards being ready for OU. And as good as Arch has looked, I think he's looked great. And I think they can beat Oklahoma with either one of those guys myself.
Yes.
I mean, there's some years kind of like Florida, Georgia, you know, where you kind of could get some craziness in that series. But no doubt. I mean, depth in general for Texas is pretty amazing to watch these days under Sark, and especially at the skill positions where they just added Isaiah Bond, Amari Nyblack, the former Alabama tight end. I don't even think he's made that much of an impact, you know, because they've got so many guys around the quarterback position. I know they had the two big injuries at the running back spot in the preseason, but they look like they've weathered that pretty well for the time being. It's fascinating coming up here in the league. I mean, when you think even the upcoming weekend and, you know, some of the matchups you're going to have and just the grind that it's become, and it's become even more underscored with OU and Texas in the league. I mean, think about Auburn.
Yeah.
We talked about Auburn potentially being 5-0 after five games.
Yeah.
And now Auburn is 2-3, and you're going to Athens Saturday. It's just getting cranked up for Auburn in a lot of ways from a schedule perspective. So really brutal. What about Gus Malzahn, too, this weekend coming up back in the Southeastern Conference? Brent,
Colorado.
Gus, after taking a tap from Prime in Orlando as a double-digit favorite.
Yes.
Now 3-1 and going to head to Florida. That's got to maybe if you're a Florida fan, you're feeling a little bit better about UCF coming to Gainesville Saturday night.
Yeah, but do they have the defense in order to really do anything with it?
Still got to tackle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would certainly help. Now, I know this is outside the league, but you're astute about these things. And I know at one of these you have been to this game. Duke is 5-0, Army is 4-0, Navy is 4-0, Indiana is 5-0, and BYU is 5-0. Now, the thing that really, and I'll be honest with you, I enjoy Army, Navy, Air Force, and I know you've been to that game. Trev, what if Army and Navy played at the end of the year? I'm not saying they're going to be undefeated, but what if they played – And for the winner, it really meant something.
The thing is, I've been to that game a couple times when it meant a lot. I mean, anytime they get together and you're there, you get a sense for what it means.
It obviously
transcends football, that game. But, yeah, I mean, if there's some pretty major stakes on the line, that would make it all the better,
it really would.
But, yeah, there's a lot of that to consider right now with this expanded playoff. And I think what we also saw from over the weekend a little bit, and I'll tell you, LSU's kind of just creeping under the radar right now. You talked about them earlier. They're about to obviously ramp it up pretty good too. But just the sense following some of these losses, you know, like the vibe around Georgia, and I understand the second half performance was outstanding, but I'm not going to go as far as to say as it felt like a moral victory for a program like Georgia, because I don't care if it's Alabama or anybody else. Where Kirby's got that thing positioned right now,
no question,
that's not going to be applicable.
Right.
But it sort of felt like that. I mean, you got Kirby after the game talking big picture, and you know what? You can, but – you know, Georgia's still got a couple of road trips coming up. I think Georgia in November is going to be really problematic for a team like Ole Miss, because even though Ole Miss has bolstered that roster going into this season, they're probably going to have some issues health-wise and in terms of roster attrition that Georgia's not going to have.
Yes.
That's when you want to really see a team like Ole Miss, if you're Georgia or Alabama, is later in the season after they've been through the grind and they don't have their roster isn't whole any longer. But you know, still got to go to Texas. Some scenarios out there right now where you can think about some 10-2s potentially.
Well,
from the Southeastern Conference, I think if Ole Miss is one of those 10-2s because of the schedule, because of what we thought was a beneficial schedule in some ways, not just in terms of maybe how it didn't get them ready for even Kentucky this last week. If they're 10-2 at the end of the regular season and they're not in the SEC championship game with a chance to win, win their way into the college football playoff, they could get left out, Brent.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Let me throw a stat at you that's very un-Georgia-like that I think sums up a lot of where they are right now. They're missing tackles, Trav. They had 15 missed tackles against Kentucky. They had 15 more against Alabama. What do you think the priority on that defensive staff is going to be this week?
Yeah, I mean, now look, Alabama, you can kind of get because of Jalen Milroe and Ryan Williams. How many of those did Ryan Williams
really? Oh, yeah.
After the catch.
Several. Right?
Including the game-winning touchdown. I mean, he had two Georgia defenders running into each other. So, yeah, you can kind of get it against a team like Alabama that's got that type of skill personnel. But that shouldn't happen against Kentucky. I mean, Brock Vandergriff's he's a solid quarterback. And good for him. He kind of etched his name and – bluegrass lore in that win over Ole Miss over the weekend, but that's high. And you're too good at the positions where you typically see a lot of your tackle production.
No doubt.
CJ Allen, Munden. Mm-hmm. You know, Malachi Starks had some issues against Alabama Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So you don't expect that. And I think I do agree that there was a lot of good to come out of that loss for Georgia.
Oh, yeah, no
in
question.
Terms of the big picture. But you know what? Alabama's not getting any worse either.
No.
Just it almost feels like because Alabama won, well, Alabama's as good as Alabama's. No, Alabama had to fight for its life in large part because it was so inexperienced at some key positions on defense, most notably in the secondary. But ultimately, it was one of those young guys that made the play in Xavien Brown to clinch the game. And that's as bad as Xavien Brown's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The rest of this year, Xavien Brown is only going to get better as a true freshman corner. And he still made the play that ended the game after he gave up some as well.
And by the way, tell me how many times did LT Overton catch your eye in that game? He is the top pass rusher at Bama through the first four games.
Yeah, I mean, he does that every week, the Texas A&M transfer. He had one play on a fourth down on a handoff to Trevor Etienne where he made a nice move against a Georgia tight end, kind of a swim move, and got right in the hole.
He really did.
Give Etienne a lot of credit. He made Overton miss and went on to pick up the first down. But, you know, I thought Alabama got it from multiple guys, too, for a lot of that game. Now, didn't always get enough pressure with just four. And then when they brought six there in the third quarter, they paid for it. And I thought Kane Womack after that kind of went, nope, we're not bringing five or six.
Right.
So that's another area where they're going to get better. I mean, their pass rush is going to get better. Quay Roussel is going to get healthier again. And he had a big strip sack of Carson Beck in that game Saturday night. So I thought it was good news for both teams, but it was especially good news for Alabama because Alabama won the game.
Yeah.
You know?
And and listen, I'll say this real quick. There are a lot of people questioning this staff. I'm going to tell you, I'm as impressed with this Alabama staff as I've been impressed with any staff in the SEC. But people may not know all these names yet, but they're going to before it's over. Womack did a tremendous job, frankly. I mean, the calls from that offensive staff, frankly, also was unbelievable. So highly, highly impressed with the job that this staff did. And having 2 weeks to go, 2 weeks to prepare, they were really ready to play.
Yeah, and they need to get better because Missouri, Tennessee –
yes. Man,
there's still a lot on this Alabama schedule coming up as well. And I agree. I think some of those coaches learned some things. I think Kane Womack did a good job, but he too is probably thinking, these are some things I can put in my back pocket. As we continue to climb the ladder here with this schedule and with this defense. So very interesting weekend. Looking forward to the upcoming weekend. We'll preview all of that coming up later in the week right here on Second Helping. Tex Tider, our guy, checking in here late. He says, howdy, boys. What's up, Tex? Glad to have you on here. Better late than never, Tex.
That's right. Yes.
But anything else, Brent, before we get out of here? I know there's the potential for some interesting scheduling partnerships.
Yes.
Going on that smells to me like the super conference at some point down the road. When you start doing these alliances with scheduling, talk of the SEC and the Big Ten doing. I mean, what are we really doing here?
Right.
Are we just basically saying we're going to have a union of some sorts between the SEC and the Big Ten? And you know what won't surprise me, though, is if the SEC and the Big Ten stay apart. For the simple fact they want to keep their championship games.
No question.
From a dollar perspective, right?
And they do. And they have got a meeting coming up. And this is going to be the athletic directors that is either this week or next week. I believe it's going to be in Nashville. That's going to be a lot of it. That they're going to be talking about the future of the playoff. They're going to be talking about playing each other, which is just incredibly fascinating. But look, to your point, they control everything, whether people want to admit it or not. that is where they are. And if they want to break away and do their own thing, that's one thing. I don't think they're ready to do that yet. But Trav, you and I both know that is a possibility somewhere down the line. So a big meeting that we will follow coming up soon.
No doubt about it. And as always, we appreciate everyone checking in here live. The show does archive right there on Ryer on YouTube. So if you don't catch us live, you can always catch the show right there at Ryer on YouTube on demand, as they like to say, I think.
Yes.
24/7, 365. Show also podcast form too. Mm-hmm. If you don't catch us here on YouTube, you want to catch us on maybe Spotify or Apple, iTunes, we're going to be right there for you. So you can do the audio version of this as well. Brent, as always, great stuff. Always a lot of fun. Always enjoy doing this with not only an insightful guy like Brent, but also a very, very good friend. And look forward to previewing week 6 coming up here on the channel in just a couple of days.
My pleasure, bud. Always enjoy it. And next time we'll get a little bit of a pops report. Some folks wanting to know if he's given up still on those Gators or if there's any hope in him right now.
Well, he's already wrong on his Gator prediction for the year. He said the Gators wouldn't win a game, so already surpassed that prediction. We'll check in with Pops. We like to do that every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Try to help out Nana with that guy.
Yes.
So for Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again. Right here, it is second helping right here on the Ryer. I almost said Southeastern Preps Illustrated, Brent. That would have been a blast from the past, right? That would
have been 30-plus
years ago. Mm-hmm. It is second helping right here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. For Brent, I'm Travis. Thanks again. Until next time, so long, everybody.